Morning. Some services, it seems like so much happens before I come up. I almost feel like it's time to go home. Well, no, it's time to go to work. This is a reading I've kept since August of 2008. It was an AP story called Immigration Raid is the Largest in U.S. History. It's from Laurel, Mississippi. The largest single workplace immigration raid in U.S. history has caused panic among many Hispanic families in Laurel, where federal agents rounded up nearly 600 plant workers suspected of being in the country illegally. One worker caught in Monday's sweep at the transformer plant said that some fellow workers applauded as immigrants were taken into custody. That's why I kept this. This really caught my attention. Federal officials said a tip from a union member prompted them to start investigating several years ago. Fabiola Pena, 21, cradled her two-year-old daughter as she described a chaotic scene as the raid began, followed by clapping. "I was crying the whole time. I didn't know what to do," Pena said. "We didn't know what was happening because everyone started running. Some people thought it was a bomb, but then we figured out it was immigration. About 100 of the 595 detained workers were released for humanitarian reasons, many of them mothers who were fitted with electronic monitoring bracelets and allowed to go home for their children," officials said. "About 475 other workers were transferred to a U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement facility. 9, who were younger than 18, were transferred to the custody of the Office of Refugee Resettlement." John Foxworth, an attorney representing some of the immigrants, said the raid was traumatic for families. "There was no communication, an immediate loss of any kind of news, and a lack of understanding of what's happening to their loved ones." He said those detained were from Brazil, El Salvador, Germany, Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico, Panama, and Peru, said Barbara Gonzalez. Oh, also, did I say Germany? Yeah, I said Germany. So this is reported by an ICE spokesman. Well, what caught this attention as I read this, your attention as I read the story to you? For me, it wasn't the size of the raid, though that was pretty impressive. It was the fact that as these 595 people were snatched away without warning, some of their fellow workers actually applauded. A follow-up article, another article on the same story, mentioned that some also cheered. Clapping and cheering. We know these as the sounds of celebration. But what was there to celebrate that day? Can we celebrate whatever we choose? Does what we choose to celebrate say something about who we are or who we wish to be? Okay, we had our interlude before our meeting, but Ellen, could you just play a few lines of just anything, noodling in a minor key? This morning in an imaginative exercise or a thought experiment. Let's imagine that a new high-budget movie has just been released. This is an American movie, mind you, with a budget bigger than the GDP of many smaller countries. The big-name stars are all fit and youthful, perfect teeth, perfect skin, great clothes. The setting is a small town in the American Wild West where, what, maybe two or three new families have moved to town? Well, let's say 20 or 30 new families. They're all somewhat like each other in ways that can make them somewhat different from the other townsfolk. Maybe it's their complexion, their language, their clothing, or customs, or religion, or maybe it's a combination of all of these at once. They stick to themselves mostly. They just want to work, make homes, have big weddings from time to time, or maybe some other big outdoor celebration like the Sneetches on the beaches, featuring food, music, and dance from their place of origin. They rent or buy houses that are run down, too close to the dump or the cemetery or the unpredictable river, unattractive, unwanted places. They cluster as much as they can, uncertain about how to interact with everyone else in town. Some places they seem to avoid, others to overrun. They don't come to the church, but there's an old building where they meet for some sort of worship, and it's not on Sunday. You can't go fishing anymore without hearing the strange sound of their language coming closer as they approach, like some new kind of weather. People, regular people, like you and me, start to grumble. Things ain't like there was before. I don't like it. Me neither, and my dad, well, you know him. Mom's scared to go out at night. Maybe we should do something. Now, hold on. I'm just saying. Well, now the camera cuts to the homes of some newcomer families. Babies crying, young women doing hand laundry, young men staring at them and then ducking out of sight while the women giggle. It's all tied up to kind of wet and then hand laundry. The camera confirms that they all have similar hair and eyes, and that they're very poor. Well, now a new sheriff comes to town, maybe Ben Affleck or Jake Gyllenhaal, maybe. He goes through the usual jokes and hazing, but gradually the locals come to trust him as they get to know him better. He's young and a little green, but we see right away that here's the stuff of heroes. He'll get to show the town what he's made of soon enough. First, he finds himself in a room in the house of a beautiful widow, Angelina Jolie, maybe, now that she's got some lines in her face, or Scarlett Johansson, who always delivers her lines with such elegance. And then, soon enough, there's trouble. First, some scrapes between newcomer youths and third-generation townies. Next, a local woman stumbles into a church meeting, face bruised, her clothing torn, bare shoulder. Who did this? It was one of them. You know how these things go in movies. Things escalate. Newcomer homes are vandalized and burned. One family dies in flaming curtains and falling rafters. Some try to fight back against the townies with scythes and hoes and kitchen knives, but the attackers are well armed with pistols and rifles and bottles of kerosene. The sheriff fumbles at first how best to respond, but halfway through the movie, he's drawn a line in the sand where he'll make his stand. And that stand is with the townies, against the newcomers, the outsiders, against the weak. Our sheriff is exactly that, ours. He turns his great physical prowess, his dead eye with pistol, his agility and endurance to the task of driving the strangers out. There's plenty of blood and mayhem, but at last it's clear who's won. Lynched bodies of newcomers, male and female, young and old, dangle from trees. But there's no sad violins playing in ethnic minor keys. It's all white key major, cheering, clapping brass and drums. The sheriff and widow fall into each other's arms at a glorious shindig. in the town square. The end. Lines that had blurred are now sharpening. People and things are back in their proper place. We can imagine someone making such a film and that some like it have been made already. What's unimaginable is that this could be an American film today. What would its box office chances be? It would never sell overseas. It's not what people expect from our movies. It's just not us. Even if we're sometimes narrow-minded or lack the courage to put ourselves on the line when someone's being treated unfairly, these are not the qualities or values that we celebrate in our films, TV shows, or our national holidays. That's what makes it so disturbing when we read that some of us could cheer and clap as people who we've worked with every day, people with spouses and children, hopes and dreams of a better life in this great country, are seized without warning, herded together, and led away. That's not very Christian, certainly, though it happened in a part of Mississippi where I don't think there are very many Hindus. Nor do I think that it fits with the teaching of any major religion. It's not American, if you ask me. And it's just not right. Such things happen. We know they do. The reasons, the conditions, the circumstances are complex and many-sided, but there's just no reason to celebrate. Well, earlier we sang that lovely hymn. It's in our UU hymnal, so we would expect that its source to be in harmony with our religious values. The tune has that ethnic minor key mournfulness, but there's also an affirmation of strength and memory and continuity. By the waters of Babylon. That comes from the first lines of Psalm 137 in the Bible. It recalls how Jewish families were herded together and led away to exile, and also how some of their neighbors helped round them up and turn them over to the Babylonians. When you hear the psalm in full, you'll understand why only a few lines ever made it into the hymnal of our liberal religious tradition. By the waters of Babylon, we sat and wept at the memory of Zion. On the poplars in the midst thereof, we hung up our harps. For there our captors had asked us words of song to amuse our tormentors. Sing us one of the songs of Zion. How could we sing a song of the Lord on alien soil? If I forget you, Jerusalem, may my right hand wither. May my tongue remain stuck to my palate if I do not keep you in mind. If I do not count Jerusalem the greatest of my joys. Remember, Lord, against those people, how they said, tear it down to the ground. Daughter of Babel, doomed to destruction, a blessing on anyone who treats you as you treated us. Happy is he who seizes your babies and shatters them against a rock. Those words about one people cheering on the expulsion of their neighbors are rendered in English as tear it down. In the Hebrew original, it's just one word repeated like a chant. Aru, aru, aru. You can imagine how a crowd might keep it going to drown out the cries of the captives. Aru, aru, this is what we think of you. Aru. Aru, your mom and dad and your sister, too. How do you say aru in American English? All too often, I'm afraid that it goes, USA! USA! Right? All too often. The psalm recalls how the Babylonians tried to turn the Israelites into caged songbirds or performing monkeys. Sing us one of the songs of Zion. Give us a laugh or a tear or two. Boo-hoo. Boo-hoo. That's real power, when you can make the conquered people put on a show for you. Tap, dance, shuffle, do your stuff. But the captives respond to their jeering neighbors, "You want us to entertain you with mock celebration? You know what will make us celebrate? Listen, happy is he who seizes your babies and shatters them against a rock. You celebrate our suffering, then we'll celebrate yours." Look at the downward spiral that this has set in motion. Celebration versus celebration, each one crueler than the last. Who wants to go there? Sometimes it seems like all too many people do. The Nazis were masters at getting people to celebrate what they should have mourned and felt ashamed of. What do we do after smashing all those Jewish businesses on the night of November 9th to 10th, 1938? We'll call it Kristallnacht, the night of crystal. And we'll celebrate it as a work of art. Later it'll be called Reichskristallnacht, the imperial night of crystal. James Young, Amherst professor, writes about how carefully crafted celebration was not mere window dressing for Nazi aggression, war, and genocide. It actually drove them. He said, "Hitler was possibly the greatest producer of political design and choreography who ever lived. We cannot separate his deeds, his policies, and his Nazi ideology from his aesthetic temper. Art, beauty, and aesthetics were not benign byproducts of the Nazi Reich, but part and parcel of its malevolent logic." Malevolent logic and beauty working together. Another source records how on May 10th, 1933, Nazi students burned upward of 25,000 volumes of un-German books. In most university towns that night, right-wing students marched in torch-like parades, quote, "against the un-German spirit." Rituals scripted for the event called for high Nazi officials, professors, university rectors, and student leaders to address the participants and spectators. Students threw the unwanted books into the bonfires with great joyous ceremony, band playing, songs, and fire oaths. As key to Nazi power as violence was the party's use of beauty and celebration. Its aesthetics have spawned imitators in many countries, including our own. Many of us remember the ceremonial destruction of the Dixie Chicks recording by fire and bulldozer and whooping and cheering crowds after the lead spoker had spoken one sentence at one concert against a war that many still supported. Even if you don't remember this, I hope you won't forget some of the crowd scenes that we've seen in the years that have followed. It's like that same crowd keeps showing up over and over again, from ancient Jerusalem to yesterday's Germany to New Jersey or in Mexico today. Aru! Aru! USA! It's the same old game of lines, played in different fields. Beautiful. Beautiful. Isn't that beautiful? Aru! USA! You guys boo! Us guys yay! So many celebrations center on identity, on drawing lines between us and them, about who is on this side and who's on the other. Our psalm asks, how could we sing a song of the Lord on alien soil? 20 years after I graduated from high school in Illinois, I was working on alien soil at a tool store in California, at the other side of the moon, somewhere from Illinois. One day, a guy my age walked into the store wearing an old blue high school jacket with the letters LTHSC on the back. I recognized him instantly. Lyons Township High School Central, the arch rival of my old school, Hinsdale Township High School Central. So quick as a flash, I shouted, "Hinsdale's better!" Even quicker. I mean, this was amazing. He shot back, "So where's your jacket?" 20 years and 2,000 miles hadn't been that old sense of rivalry. We both laughed and then spent the next half hour reminiscing about the football game, the vandalism, the big fights that have broken out at sports events, or just when someone dared to wear their blue or red jacket on the wrong side of the township line. Illinois counties are divided into townships that share services, like high schools, between several neighbor towns. Jacket-based encounters have led to many injuries over generations and some tragedies as well. I think you can argue that what happens in hometown America in situations like this, and the rallies, and the thing with the Dixie Chicks, is different in kind from what happened in the Third Reich Germany or the Babylonian captivity, and not just in scale. But I wouldn't dare say they're so different that it can't happen here. A lot depends on which new sheriff comes to town, of course, but you know that, and you know that's not all. The truth is, I never had a high school jacket of my own, nor do I put partisan bumper stickers on my car. Many of those make me wonder, Calvin. Hey, you've seen, I don't want to go into all those bumper stickers. Why do you want to signal hostility to other drivers when we're all there steering these big, dangerous machines so close to each other? But there is a bumper sticker that I like. It says, "Celebrate diversity." And then there's a row of religious symbols. Sometimes there's also rainbow colors. Religion so often means a celebration of homogeneity and a drawing of lines between people. Lines of the starkest and deadliest kind. Such religion still provides us with a wellspring of intensity to draw on all over the world. But the spirit of celebrating diversity, a spirit that we affirm here, can probably not match the intensity of this bloody game of lines and the attention that it continues to command. But diversity means variety, and variety holds our attention in a very different way. Maybe some folks would be delighted to finish off a busy day of burning un-German books by heading out to a row of restaurants that all serve only German food. I, personally, would rather go out today and find what you find here in Portland. Food from everywhere, cooked by people from every place you can imagine, with the fruits and greens and goods from every kind of farm and garden. Knowing that all of our children are studying together, that some will marry and blend and create new cuisines, new songs, and a new humanity is a cause of celebration for me. For you too, I'll bet. What we celebrate says as much about us as what we believe or what we achieve, and it shapes us too. Celebration shapes us. A few weeks ago, I invited you to look at the back of your order of service and all those fine principles that we covenant to affirm and promote. But today, please take a moment to look at what comes right after. There's also a little insert in the order of service where it says that the living tradition that we share draws from many sources. You see that? The living tradition we share draws from many sources. When we went through the principles, you read them. So why don't we go one person after the other? So the living tradition that we share draws from many sources.
The direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and openness to the forces which create and uphold life.
Next one.
Words and deeds of prophetic women and men which John
You named one of those structures of evil. That's right. Next one.
Wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life.
Jewish and Christian teachings which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors as ourselves.
Neighbors as ourselves.
Humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and spirit.
Do you ever notice that? An actual sin named by its traditional name? Idolatry. Last one?
Spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony and the rhythms of nature, with the rhythms.
Thank you. That was the only one that was added after the original set. This was added. That last one was added some years later. Well, I wind up. If this is just another way to play that old, age-old religious game of lines, I'd say that these are some pretty funny-looking lines. What was that old toy called, the thing you put a pen in, or like gears? A spirograph. A spirograph, right? It seems like these lines in our sources loop every which way they can. It's like they were trying to draw everyone in and leave nobody out. If that sounds un-American, I'd like to know just how. And if it all ain't one fine little celebration of diversity, I will eat my bran.